Chapter 13. I watched Becca's face fall as Fareed told us about the damaged bridge. Sometimes it felt like nothing could ever be simple on our journey, but I had to get Becca to her mom. We just had to find another route. I pulled out my phone, and though I still didn't have any bars, my maps app still seemed to work.
I guess the satellites are still doing their job somewhat,
Becca said as she peered over at my phone. I scrolled to our current location, and I managed to locate Edwards Bridge, which, according to Fareed, was no more.
You're sure it's gone?
Haywan asked.
Maybe we could still get across it somehow.
No, Teddy said. I saw it after it had been destroyed. It's utterly useless.
What's this? I asked, as I zoomed in on another bridge on the map, which was near the Edwards Bridge.
That's the train track, Roger said as he leaned over to look. It takes a similar route, and it would get you across the river at least.
That's all we need, I said. If we can get over the water, then we can work it out.
The motorbikes will fit over a train track,
Becca said hopefully.
And it looks like the rail parallels the highway for most of the way, so we can just pop back over once we're on the other side.
Then we should gather our gear and go, I said, as I started to walk back toward the pub.
What about breakfast? Fareed asked.
Yeah, what about breakfast?
Becca added.
I had visions of pancakes in my head.
Can we get something to go? I asked.
Sure, Fareed agreed. I can wrap up some sandwiches for you.
Becca huffed, but I could tell by the quick smile that she was excited at the thought of getting back on the road. We followed Fareed and the others back to the pub, where we checked our motorbikes, accepted some dried fruit and canned vegetables as thanks, and topped it off with some fresh bacon sandwiches and coffee from Fareed that we gulped down while we sat on the back of our motorbikes.
Will you guys be okay? I asked as I munched on my sandwich.
We'll have to be, Teddy shrugged.
Thank you, Fareed said, for everything. If it wasn't for you lot, then we wouldn't have all of our supplies, and that bastard would still be running things at the pub.
I guess you'll need a new boss, I smiled. If you're doing a vote, I would say Fareed would do a fine job.
Oh, no, the cook laughed. I'm very happy just being the cook. Nothing too important.
Nothing too important? I asked, as I put a hand on Fareed's shoulder. You made us feel normal for a night with your cooking. There's nothing more important than that. And we couldn't have asked for any better gift.
Your family will be happy to have you back,
Becca added.
I bet they can't wait to taste your cooking again.
Oh,
Haywan added.
I think you might need a new knife, though.
That was my bad, I laughed. But if you hadn't given it to me, I don't know what we would have done.
Good luck, my friends, Fareed said. I hope you all find what you're looking for.
You too, I smiled. Good luck, all of you.
If you ever stop by the Stinky Pete again, Roger said, drinks are on the house, when the world is back to normal.
We'd scarfed down our sandwiches by then, and Fareed refilled our styrofoam cups and found plastic lids to go over the top. There wasn't a real cup holder on the motorbikes, but Becca and I managed to wedge ours into a small holder on the dash that was probably designed for some sort of police gear. Haywan merely shrugged, gulped down what she could, and then handed the cup back to Fareed. We fired up the engines, and the roar was deafening in the alley. I glanced upwards and then toward the street, but no dinos appeared to investigate the sudden noise. I waved goodbye to the good people of the Stinky Pete and then pulled back onto the main road.
I really hope Fareed finds his family,
Becca said as she rode next to me.
That guy is so nice, and I think I would fight another scorpion for some more of his curry.
We should have asked for some to go, I sighed. I bet he would have fixed us up some little lunch boxes.
So which way?
Haywan asked. That way, I said, as I pointed toward a wide, modern road. Looks like that road will lead us toward the bridge, and we won't have to go past the castle or the body.
Good thing,
Haywan replied, as we heard something rumble in the distance.
We've been lucky that nothing else has been attracted to all the dino bodies, but it sounds like that's about to change.
I nodded and sped up. There was no point in trying to go slow and conceal the motorbikes, because the sound of the engines could probably be heard for miles. At least on the wider road, there was plenty of room for us to navigate around the abandoned cars. We soon found ourselves in the new section of Newark, which was mostly buildings built in the 20th century. Most of them had probably gone up in the early decades, but there were a pair of ugly concrete block buildings that had to come from the 1960s or 1970s. We heard more rumbles and something skittered in the shadows of a side street. But then the road made a sharp turn and led us to a lovely view of the river and the wooded areas on both sides of the bank.
"It's charming,"
Heiwan said, as we stopped to study the sight. The river was twice as wide at this point than where we had fought the scorpion. I tried not to think about what could be lurking under the still water as I studied the two bridges up ahead. It was obvious that the highway bridge had partially collapsed, and I wondered if the dino that had caused that had made it to shore or been killed by the fall. There were still cars on the bridge, and hundreds of vehicles sat abandoned at the foot of the structure. But just beyond that was the rail bridge, which looked like it was still in one piece. It was a narrow truss bridge, which might explain why the dinos hadn't tried to use it. Either that, or the short train that was stopped halfway across had discouraged any dinos from making the crossing. "Huh," I muttered, as I studied the train. We rode forward slowly and maneuvered through the cars and trucks to the railroad crossing. The barrier was still up, so we drove the motorbikes onto the rails and followed the track toward the bridge. It was a bumpy ride, and little pebbles kept pinging against the motorbike, but the ride smoothed out as we hit the concrete that marked the beginning of the bridge. Then we were forced to stop when we realized that the stalled train effectively blocked the bridge. "There's not much space to go around," I said.
"We could probably fit on foot,"
Becca observed.
"But that's not much use."
"We should definitely keep the motorbikes," I said. "We'll need them once we reach the other side. How easy do you think train driving is?"
"Do you think there are still people on it?"
Becca asked.
"Maybe the engineer's still there."
"I doubt it," I said. "Surely they would have climbed out and walked the rest of the way. It's kind of asking to be eaten, just sitting on the exposed bridge like that."
"Look how much wider this part of the river is,"
Heiwan said.
"I'm surprised nothing has jumped up to munch on the train already."
"Heiwan, you can hotwire cars. How different do you think it would be for a train?"
"I think it would be very different. It's a completely different machine, and it would probably make a lot of noise with the diesel engine. Could you try?" "I can. Should we walk across?"
"Yeah. Let's leave our motorbikes here and go have a look at the train."
"Is it safe to walk on the tracks?"
Becca asked as we turned off the engines on our motorbikes. "I doubt any other trains are coming," I said as we dismounted. "The biggest threat is probably whatever lies on this end of the river." The girls nodded, and we started to make our way over to the stationary train with our rifles grasped in our hands as we walked. The metal rails made a slight echo every time we took a step, but we managed to make it to the train without any dinos noticing us. The carriages were silver and red, with little yellow curtains pinned back in each window. There was just enough room at either side of the track for us to walk past it, but even that was a tight squeeze. We might be able to force the motorbikes through, but we'd probably damage them if we did. I tried to peer in the windows as we scrunched by, but it was hard to see much of anything besides rows of empty seats. There were no voices or movement, and the exit door on the second carriage was wide open. "Let's check it out," I said, as I took a large step to climb up into the train. Becca jumped in behind me, and we both gave Heiwan a hand to clamber inside. The train was the average cross-city type with thinly cushioned chairs covered in a speckled pattern and gray plastic tables with small trash cans built in. "Look, people's stuff is still here." There were a few purses and rucksacks dotted across the bag compartments, so Becca and I reached up to grab them. As we pulled the bags down, Heiwan checked inside them and pulled out a few candy bars and bottles of water.
"I guess they left in a hurry,"
Heiwan observed, as we looked at the small pile of loot.
"I wonder why."
"There's one more carriage before the driver's cab," I said, as I stuffed a couple of candy bars into one of the packs. "Let's see what other supplies there are in the next one." The automatic doors between the carriages were already open, and I wondered if that was the emergency setting as we stepped between the cars. "Only a couple of bags in this one," I said, as I pulled down the two backpacks from above. "Couple of extra water bottles, at least."
"Some crisps,"
Becca said, as she pulled the backpacks open.
"Not a whole lot else that helps us. Unless anyone needs a diary and some pens."
"Let's go to the driver's cab," I said, "and see if Heiwan can perform a miracle for us." We passed a table with an abandoned book, something called Skulldudgery, that featured a man at a card table with a pile of gold coins and a woman in a skimpy outfit pouring a drink into his glass on the cover. I also spotted a pale pink sweater left behind on one of the chairs with a butterfly pin on the collar and a lone sneaker under one of the seats.
It was a creepy sight, and I wondered again what might be lurking in the waters below. The door to the driver's carriage was also open, and when I stepped inside, my eyes immediately fell on the controls. There was a bloody handprint on the surface, and dried blood was smeared across the cabin. The left-hand side window was broken, and glass littered the carpeted floor.
"I guess they had visitors," I said.
I didn't spot blood anywhere else on the train, so hopefully some people managed to make it out to safety.
"Must have been something small,"
Becca said.
"A raptor, maybe? Anything else would have a hard time fitting inside the train."
"Watch your feet, Haewon," I said, as the Korean beauty stepped over to the controls. "We should check the back carriage," I said to Becca. "We didn't go in that one, and I want to make sure there isn't anything hiding back there."
"Good idea,"
the blonde Brit replied.
"Are you okay here, Haewon?"
"Yes, thank you,"
Haewon replied as she studied the buttons.
"I'll see what I can do."
"Shout if you need us," I said, and stepped back out of the driver's cabin.
"Do you think she'll get it moving?"
Becca asked as we made our way to the back of the train. "I hope so. Otherwise, we'll have to find another way to cross the river or leave our motorbikes and walk. I don't really want to do either of those things." Becca bit her lip and pulled on her blonde hair as we approached the final carriage. "Hey," I said, as I stopped and held her shoulders. "We're going to get to your mom. We've made it this far, and we're not giving up now. I would do anything for you."
"I know,"
Becca smiled.
"It just feels a bit more urgent every day, you know? All the new portals are appearing, and cell service is getting worse. I'm just so worried."
"If she's anything like you, then you have nothing to worry about. I bet she's well-stocked and keeping safe. Maybe when we get there, she'll have some of that gin you like so much."
"If she did, she would have drunk it by now,"
the blonde laughed.
"But thanks, Jason. I know we can do this."
I pulled her close to me, and she reached up for a kiss, which I gladly provided. Her lips were full and sweet, and we both sighed for a few moments as our tongues met. "Now let's check for dinos," I said as we broke apart. "Come on." We stepped through the final doorway into the third carriage, but it was just as empty as the others. The only thing left inside was a gift, which was wrapped in golden paper and placed on the luggage rack.
"Oh,"
Becca said as she reached up for the gift.
"That's so sad. Look, it's addressed to my love."
"What's inside?" I asked, and the blonde tore at the paper to reveal a giant chocolate bar.
"Wow, I guess their love really liked chocolate. This will be good for our supplies, though. A little sugar pick-me-up when we need it."
"A little? There's enough there to last us weeks if we ration it. That's a pretty good find, if you ask me." Becca opened the pack and shoved the giant chocolate bar inside. I did another quick sweep of the carriage to make sure we hadn't missed anything that might have tumbled under the seats in the rush to get away. But there were no more abandoned bags or gifts. "This would be a good spot to sleep in," I said, "if it was off the bridge and somewhere more secluded."
"You're right,"
Becca agreed, as we started to head back through the carriages.
"If we could get the doors shut, it would be a nice little shelter for a while."
"I've got it,"
Haewon called from the driver's cabin.
"I think I can get it working."
"Amazing," I said, as we jogged back to the front of the train. "Are you sure?"
"It helped that they left their twos,"
Haewon replied as we joined her in the cabin.
"I'm not sure how far I can get it to move, but I can definitely get it started."
"You're amazing!"
Becca squealed as she gave Haewon a kiss on the cheek. "Becca and I should follow with the motorbikes," I said. "If Haewon can get this thing off the bridge, then we won't have to go back for them."
"Good plan. Although, I vote we walk them across. I don't think my rump can take much more time on the tracks, and I don't want to end up in the river."
"Agreed. It'll be easier anyway." We left Haewon to work her magic in the driver's cabin while we made our way out through the carriage door and back onto the bridge. I checked the water below as we squeezed along the narrow space, but there were no ripples or tail spikes to be seen. We were nearly back to the motorbikes when we heard a dull thud in the distance. We stopped and swung our rifles along the river's edge as we scanned the treetops, but I didn't see any movement.
"That sounded pretty far off, right? I swear the bridge vibrated a little."
"It didn't sound close," I agreed. "But we should hurry up anyway. The train will make a ton of noise once it gets going, and I want to make sure we clear the bridge as quickly as we can."
"Can we walk all three at once?"
Becca asked as we reached the end of the bridge. "I think so. If we put Haewon's in the middle and ours on either side, we can both have one hand on Haewon's and one hand on our own."
"Cool,"
Becca said.
We heard another thump, which didn't sound quite as distant as before.
"Hurry," I said with a glance over my shoulder.
We rolled the motorbikes onto the bridge, and a moment later the train suddenly made a wheezing sound followed by a low rumble as the engine sprang to life.
"She did it!"
Becca exclaimed.
"Way to go, Haewon!"
I smiled, but my attention was still focused behind us where the thump had come from. I still didn't see any telltale signs of a dino presence, but there were enough tall buildings nearby to hide any oversized lizards until they were nearly at the water. The wheels on the train made a screech as they very slowly began to roll forward, and the sound of metal scraping metal punched through the silence. Becca shot me a worried look, and I tried to jog after the train.
"Just keep going," I said quietly. "Hopefully we'll be on the other side before anything comes to investigate."
At that moment, we heard a familiar roar and another thud that sounded far too close. I spun around to see a shadow run from the buildings and toward the trees at the edge of the water. The oaks and elms began to move from side to side as something large crashed through them.
"Shit!"
I whispered as Becca craned her neck to look.
"Becca, I think we might need to leave the motorbikes."
"Should we run?"
Becca asked.
"I don't know if..."
She was interrupted by a T-Rex, which tore through the edge of the woodland and towered above us with wild eyes and a feral scream.
"Stay still," I whispered, as the huge dino looked around the river. "I don't think it's seen us yet."
We watched as the creature surveyed the riverside and then swung its massive head to the left when a cow mooed in the distance. The sound of the farm animal seemed to be enough to catch the dino's interest, and the T-Rex started off toward the noise.
"Thank God,"
Becca whispered, as we watched the creature start off down the left riverbank. The train screeched to a halt at that moment, and I realized that Haewon must have heard the T-Rex and stopped to make sure we were safe. However, the harsh scraping sound made the dino spin around, and its eyes locked onto me and Becca.
"Run!"
I said, as I shoved the motorbikes to the side of the bridge.
"Into the train, now!"
"Haewon!"
Becca shouted as she neared the open carriage door.
"Start the train! Go!"
The train immediately cranked into action again, and it started to roll down the tracks once more. As we ran alongside it, Becca leapt up to the open doorway, and I grabbed her thighs to shove her inside. The blonde jumped to her feet and reached a hand out to help me climb inside the moving train.
"Hurry, Jason!"
Becca cried as the T-Rex took its first step onto the bridge.
"I'm going to try and shoot it,"
I said with a glance at the enormous dino.
"There's a ladder at the back of the train. If I get up high, I could get a good shot. Stay inside."
Becca opened her mouth to argue, but I ran off before she could speak. It didn't feel great to be running toward the T-Rex, but at least it seemed slightly wary about the bridge as it ducked down to fit inside the tall metal beams. I raced to the back of the last carriage and reached out to grab the small metal ladder that led onto the top of the cars. I swung myself up onto the first rung and pulled my body up as the train kept its slow roll toward the end of the bridge. I could hear the T-Rex start to gain confidence in its steps behind me, and it roared with so much power the train vibrated as I reached the top.
"Damn it!"
I muttered as I slipped. For half a moment, my stomach lurched out my throat as I slid down, but then I managed to get my boots back on the rungs, and I grunted as I pulled myself onto the roof of the train. It was a flat silver surface with metal ridges that I could use as a grip as I hauled myself over the top. The track was smooth enough that I managed to stand up and turn to face the closing dino, and I just hoped Haewon didn't slam the brakes on too soon. I steadied my Remington rifle and aimed toward the skull of the dino as it started to run after the train. Its head smacked against the beams, but it didn't seem to notice now that it had a target. The T-Rex snarled as it raced past our motorbikes, and I watched as Haewon's was knocked into mine, but thankfully they stayed on the bridge. As the beast approached, I pulled the trigger on the rifle and felt the kick against my shoulder. The bullet had hit just to the left of the dino's eye, but missed the middle of the skull. The T-Rex roared and sped up, and I realized it would be on the train in seconds. I took aim again and pulled the trigger, but nothing happened.
"Oh, shit!"
I said as I realized I needed to reload, and my ammo was in the small pack on my motorbike.
"Jason!"
Becca shouted from the open doorway.
"Jason, get inside!"
"I need ammo!"
I yelled as I ran down the roof of the train. There was a small gap between the carriages, but the roar of the dinosaur was all the encouragement I needed to make the jump. I landed on the second roof and sat down so I could lower myself into the doorway. Just as I swung my feet down, the T-Rex caught up with the train.
Jason!
Becca screamed as I fell into the carriage, and the dinosaur's massive jaw clamped down on the back of the train.